With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
USDA's weekly export inspections report for the week ending September 18th showed mixed grain movement. Total exports reaching 2.7 million metric tons, down from 3.13 million the previous week, but still above 2.45 million reported a year earlier. Corn leading the pace, 52.3 million bushels, down slightly from the previous week, but well above last year. Year-to-date corn shipments, 137.4 million bushels, compared to about two-thirds of that a year ago. Now, soybean inspections slowed, 17.8 million bushels, sharp decline from last week, and still under last year's pace. Still, cumulative exports remain ahead of the totals last year, which was 57.7 million bushels. Wheat inspections, 31.4 million bushels, stronger than both last week and last year. Pacific Northwest ports leading shipments to Asia and the Middle East. Sorghum movement, though, 1.2 million bushels, reflecting much weaker demand compared with last year. Overall, the data suggests solid demand for U.S. corn and wheat, but softer soybean loadings ahead of harvest. U.S. fruit and vegetable growers facing intensifying pressure from both imports and rising costs. That's according to University of Georgia economist. USDA projecting 2025 cash receipts for all crops at $236.6 billion. It's down 2.5% from last year, with vegetable revenues expected to decline even as consumer demand remains strong. Imports, though, continue to surge, reaching $49.8 billion in 2024, about one quarter of all ag imports, compared to just $15.9 billion in exports. Now, Mexico dominates U.S. vegetable imports, while Canada, Peru, and Chile are key fruit suppliers, often shipping into U.S. harvest windows and depressing domestic prices. But at the same time, growers facing soaring cost. USDA estimates farm production expenses will reach $467 billion this year, up 2.6% from last year, and more than 36% higher than in 2018. Fruits and vegetables, labor-intensive and reliance on the H-2A guest worker program means higher wages, fees, and compliance burdens. Well, U.S. cattle supplies remain historically tight, keeping a firm tone under beef prices into 2026. USDA estimates the total herd at about 86.7 million head as of January 1st. That's near 70-year lows, while the July 1st inventory showed only a modest uptick in beef replacement heifers. Signals a slow rebuild at best. Imports are backfilling the gap as the mid-year outlook pegged 2025 beef imports near 5.19 billion pounds, with only a slight pullback expected next year as global exportable supplies tighten. Herd rebuilding continues to look slow, keeping cattle prices supported, and the beef on dairy crosses have been helping to fill the feedlots. It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You are right in the heat of the season. With field maintenance, planting, fertilizing, and spraying, you don't have time for equipment breakdowns. Let Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, be your partner in keeping your equipment running at peak performance. Our factory-trained technicians support you with in-field service and genuine Case IH parts. Wiley has 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This is Agriculture Today.
And we anticipate as we go forward, we're going to continue to see declines in this year's U.S. corn crop as well that are going to further tighten up the supply.
Arlen Suderman is with StoneX.
Now, that doesn't mean that we're in a robust bullish situation for corn in the near term. We're harvesting a big crop. That crop is getting smaller. We expect that the size of that crop is going to continue to decline. As I've said before, big crops get smaller. That's what history tells us. And so you get the first estimates in August since 1993. Those estimates have increased from the July estimate 17 times. And out of those 17 years, 11 times the final crop size came in smaller. The biggest problem in 5 out of the last 6 years has been this tendency to finish the growing season dry. And this year we add in some disease pressure in there as well. And so that shrinks the seed size. So if seed size is shrunk, then you have more seeds required to create a bushel of corn in measurement. And so it's very difficult to detect visually a seed that's 5% smaller. But when it shows up in the combine harvested, you have a 5% lower yield. Well, the seed can be much lower than that. It can also be bigger than that, but this year's weather would argue for smaller. Now, overall, as we look at the early harvest results, they've been all over the place. Initially, they were low, and that's not a surprise. That's the case most years, because when you do have some stress, whichever year we have some stress in some areas of the Midwest, those stress fields tend to dry down and be ready for harvest first. The question is, where do you go from there? As we've gone forward and got deeper into the harvest, we have seen both very, very good yields that have been very impressive, and some poor yields. And so it's been highly variable. Overall, it does suggest that our national average yield is going to come down, and we'll be updating our customers survey next week on October 1st. And I'm looking forward to seeing those numbers as they come into us next week. So as we go forward now, let's focus again on the demand side. When you look at this year's demand between exports, feed usage, and ethanol grind, we're looking at a need to move over 300 million bushels per week through the supply pipeline. That's going to create the demand to move through. Initially, as the crop gets harvested, we're going to be sending corn to the Pacific Northwest for shipment to our Southeast Asian customers. We're going to be moving corn down the Mississippi River, which has low water levels and starting to see some barge restrictions, trying to get it down to the New Orleans area before the river freezes up later this fall. That's going to be the primary focus, is to move that corn. We'll also see the ethanol plants trying to acquire supplies, livestock producers trying to acquire supplies. So that's going to be going forward. When you look at our exports, USDA has a target this year of 2.975 billion bushels for exports. That's a record large total if we verify it. We're just at the beginning of the marketing year thus far, which started on September 1st. But for the data that we have through the first 2 weeks of the year, when you look at pre-commitments and then sales over that two-week period, we are already exceeding the seasonal pace needed to hit USDA's target, that 2.975 billion bushels, by 175 million bushels. So we're on a good start, and that doesn't include the 25 million bushels of flash sales that have been awarded over the last three business days, as well as additional sales as well. Flash sales are only required to include sales of over 100,000 metric tons. So corn demand is strong.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Looking at the placement by weight categories.
Tyler Cousins with the Livestock Marketing Information Center.
So as expected, placements were down nationally across those weight categories. Specifically looking at some of those placements of cattle weighing less than 600 pounds, those are actually down 10% to 355,000 head. 600 to 700 pound placements were down 13%. 700 to 800 pounds were down 10%. And then those 800 pound and above were actually down 8%. So by and large, we're seeing about double digit declines in those weight categories for placements there. And as I had mentioned earlier, that 10% decline in August placements to nearly 1.8 million head is the lowest for the month of August since 2015. So kind of looking at these weight categories for each respective weight category, it was the lowest number of placements for those categories since 2015. So kind of this 2015 timeframe is noteworthy because that was that last bottom cycle for the last cattle cycle. So this is kind of signaling that cattle supplies will continue to remain tight here for the foreseeable future here as we get through 25 and into 26. So another piece of information from the report is kind of looking at some of the number of days that cattle are on feed, specifically looking at cattle on feed over 120, 150, and 180 days. So kind of some of the things that we're seeing is these cattle are still remaining on feed for a longer period of time than we historically have seen. So for cattle that have been on feed over 120 and 150 days, each of these are both up about over 5% to almost 6% from last year. And then, cattle on feed over 100 days are actually up about 500,000 head from last year. So this trend of cattle remaining on feed for a longer number of days has been occurring for the better part of a year now. And so kind of bring this up from a discussion standpoint, because this longer period of cattle on feed points toward kind of that continued expectation of higher dressed weights, meaning we still need to keep an eye on just that trend of dressed weights here through the rest of the year. I'm looking a little bit closer at the trend in dressed weights for this year. Year to date through mid-September, dressed weights for steers are actually tracking above about 24 pounds or about 3% from the same period last year. And if we actually compare that to the five-year average, it's actually trending about 51 pounds or about 6% above that five-year average. So kind of although dressed weights remain elevated compared to those historical levels, it has not been enough to offset the tighter available cattle supplies coming through the supply chain, which has actually led to a year-to-date decline in domestic beef production of about 3% compared to last year. So kind of overall, some takeaways from this September cattle on feed report. Expected some of the results. So the report's kind of somewhat considered neutral from an overall market response. But there are still a number of moving pieces that are at play within the market that bear watching. And a couple of those moving forward will be just kind of the continued cow supplies that remain tight, just due to lower domestic supplies and that border with Mexico remaining closed. And kind of lastly, one of the points I touched on was just the dress weights remaining high and elevated, which is an item watch in the near term, just from an overall beef production side of things.
What about demand?
Looking at some of that kind of post Labor Day grilling season time frame, kind of looking at the box beef side of things, seasonally what we see is some of that demand profile start to change a little bit as people are more indoors, not outside grilling as much. And so we're kind of seeing some of that play out, and just that box beef cutout value starting to move a little bit lower compared to last week, down to about $13. But I think if we kind of look across the primals and so forth, we're seeing that decline. But I think comparatively to a year ago, we're still seeing some of those values that are 20, 30, almost 40% above where they were a year ago. So, kind of still points to a strong demand picture just from the beef side of things.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
You hear that? That's the sound of forever. Because there's nowhere else you'd rather spend forever than on land like this. Tending a herd, growing crops, raising a family. At Capital Farm Credit, we thrive at helping the next generation of farmers and ranchers like yourself by providing advice, products, and opportunities to help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Taiwan has always been a very good trading partner, but there's never been real commitments, things that we could rely on, especially for, again, for our row croppers who are facing years at this point of financial distress and cost of inputs have just skyrocketed.
Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins on the announcement of a Taiwanese trade deal.
Taiwan was a great commitment from them to buy significant numbers of our soybeans, et cetera, beginning next year. And I think that's really a great sign. I'm headed to Japan 2 weeks from, actually a little bit less than 2 weeks. We just got back to the UK. We're now headed over to Japan to talk rice with Japan and hopefully do the exact same thing. Soon after that, headed to Mexico to talk more ethanol, more soybeans, et cetera, 2 weeks after we get back from Japan. You kind of see we're really putting a hustle and a cadence into place. We've already got the teams from USDA scattered around the world working on this, but I just think it's probably, if not the most important, one of the most important things I need to be doing right now is moving our product out across the world as these farmers are facing a pretty tough economy.
She says the administration recognizes the dire financial situation.
We have been very clear about that. It's now becoming, you know, more and more apparent that we need to be ready. Of course, our partners in Congress are the ones that fund that. You know, we obviously are a constitutional republic and have the different branches. But I just this morning talked to several senators on the Ag Committee, been in constant conversations with the White House, keep monitoring the market and see, you know, day by day what happens. We will be releasing another $13 billion. This will be aside from any potential additional, but another $13 billion in the ETAP program, which will be moving into the countryside over the next 6 to 8 weeks. But in addition, we are putting all of those plans together right now. So we are on it. We are paying very, very close attention, and we'll likely have an announcement coming soon.
But when it comes to some of the problems with soybeans, could become a global issue. Arlen Suderman with StoneX.
Well, in the United States, we alternate between corn and soybeans. That's where we get the best disease control, just through culturally alternating those crops. And so farmers like to keep in those rotations between corn and soybeans back and forth year to year. And so they hope to be able to continue to do so. When we look at alternatives, it becomes more challenging. Certainly the industry is chasing other alternatives to develop the markets in Africa or elsewhere, but that's going to take considerable time to do so. Ironically, just yesterday I had a group of clients in our office in the United States from Brazil, and they were asking me the same question, because what they're seeing now is a growth in demand for the soybeans, fueling the expansion of production there as they take market share away from the United States. But overall demand in China is starting to flatten out. And so their concern is once they get that market share away from the United States and they're continuing to expand production and Chinese demand has flattened out, then where do they go? And the United States at least has a biofuel program that is well developed now and continuing to develop, but it's much further along than where it is in Brazil. They're a number of years behind where they need to be able to absorb the extra soybeans they'll be producing once they fully have filled that U.S. niche going into China. They're worried about what they're going to do with their surplus soybeans. So that continues to be a problem, not just for us, but in the future will be for Brazil as well.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at deltapine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
This is Agriculture Today.
The World Trade Organization Public Forum in Geneva, Switzerland. The Public Forum is the WTO's largest outreach event, providing a platform for interested stakeholders from around the world to discuss the latest developments in global trade and propose ways of enhancing the multilateral trading system. The main aim of the 2025 Forum was to explore how digital advancements are redefining standards within the international trading system and enhancing global connectivity, innovation, and cooperation. NPPC submitted comments on state laws that have out-of-state economic impacts to the U.S. Department of Justice Antitrust Division and the National Economic Council, noting that recently states have enacted laws mandating certain agricultural production practices even for out-of-state farmers. NPPC singled out California Proposition 12 and Massachusetts Question 3, both of which ban in the state the sale of pork from hogs born to sows raised in housing that doesn't meet their arbitrary standards. The California law has hurt that state's consumers, with pork prices rising and increased pork production cost for farmers throughout the country. Even local-level laws can disrupt and cause economic harm, said NPPC. San Francisco's 2017 antibiotic use in food animals ordinance, for example, requires larger grocery retailers in the city to report detailed information about the use of antibiotics in meat and poultry products. It imposes significant reporting mandates on retailers that inevitably shift responsibility to producers, most of whom have no connection to San Francisco. And in Chicago, to ensure that institutional food purchasing advances an equitable, healthy, fair, local, humane, and sustainable food system, end quote, pork was eliminated from the city school system's menu. U.S. pork producers are all too familiar with the challenges posed by disruptive extraterritorial regulations at the federal, state, and local levels. Burdensome and often poorly reasoned statutory and regulatory mandates impose economic harm. By addressing the extraterritorial impact of these laws, policies, and regulations, the Trump administration can help foster a more resilient and sustainable pork industry, ensuring that our farmers can continue to provide high-quality, affordable pork to families across the country while maintaining the economic vitality of rural communities. The Senate voted to confirm the nominations of Dudley Hoskins as Undersecretary for USDA's Marketing and Regulatory Programs and Scott Hutchins as Undersecretary for USDA's Research, Education, and Economics. Hoskins was counsel to the Senate Committee on Ag, Nutrition, and Forestry and previously was senior advisor to then-Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue and chief of staff for the MRP mission area in the first Trump administration. Also serving during Trump's first term, Hutchins was deputy undersecretary for the REE mission area. NPPC strongly supported both Hoskins and Hutchins' nominations. In May, NPPC joined nearly 120 national and state ag organizations on a letter supporting Hoskins' nomination and urging the Senate Ag panel to approve him. The MRP Undersecretary oversees the agencies that facilitate domestic and international marketing of U.S. ag products, protect U.S. plant and animal health, regulate genetically engineered organisms, administer the Animal Welfare Act, and carry out wildlife damage management activities. The Undersecretary also helps set national and international standards.
Mike Davis, Washington.
You are right in the heat of the season. With field maintenance, planting, fertilizing, and spraying, you don't have time for equipment breakdowns. Let Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, be your partner in keeping your equipment running at peak performance. Our factory-trained technicians support you with in-field service and genuine Case IH parts. Wiley has 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This has been Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I'm very honored to testify before you today in regard to oversight of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Civil Works Program and the implementation of the Water Resources Development Acts.
At a recent House Ag Subcommittee hearing on the Water Resources Development Act, Lieutenant General William H. Graham, Jr.
Through the Civil Works Program, the Army Corps works with our partners to study, build, and operate water resource projects focusing on our three main mission areas of commercial navigation, flood and storm damage reduction, and aquatic ecosystem restoration. Let me break those down. The navigation program, which consists of our coastal and Great Lakes channels, as well as the inland rivers and intercoastal waterways, underpins much of the national economy, ensuring that commodities can move reliably and efficiently. Our flood and storm damage reduction program maintains 746 dams, over 13,000 miles of federal levees, and 450 miles of shore protection. Those systems provide, on average, a staggering $200 billion per year of flood damages avoided. To continuously maintain and improve these mission areas, I certainly want to thank this committee, as was mentioned by the chairman, for supporting the Corps Civil Works Program with your commitments since 2014 to passing biennial Water Resources Development Acts. Those acts have provided us with the authorities necessary to address the changing needs of the nation's water resources infrastructure. WRDA 24 advanced the Corps' principal civil works missions by authorizing new navigation, flood risk management, coastal storm risk management, and aquatic ecosystem restoration studies and projects all across the country. These studies and projects, when funded, will strengthen the supply chain, better protect Americans from flooding, and improve degraded aquatic environments. We deeply value the authorities you have entrusted to us. Our pledge is to put them to work to deliver for the American people. To that end, the Army Corps' objective every day is to safely deliver quality projects on schedule within budget. We measure this closely, our schedule delivery. Our current on-schedule rate, when I checked this morning, was 80.4%. That's a low, low, low B, and that's unacceptable. This performance is influenced by factors we can control and factors such as inflation that we don't control. So focusing on those things that we can control, the Army Corps is absolutely committed to procedural improvements, as Mr. Tell spoke about, in the following three areas. First, we've got to get the engineering right. The focus here is on the maturity of the designs. We will not request authority to build new projects unless the design is advanced enough that we truly understand what we're proposing to build. That threshold is usually around the 35% level. We have not been doing that in the past. There are some nuances on how we need to work to break down large, complex projects, and there are some nuances on cost sharing of studies, vice cost sharing of construction. And we are committed to working through those nuances with this committee. But fundamentally, we need to better understand what it is we're proposing to build before we ask you for authority to build it. The second thing, we've got to get the project management right. Here we're focusing on crafting logical, fully resourced schedules and sticking to them, ensuring that we're delivering these important projects with a great sense of urgency, or as General Kelly puts it, hustle. If we stay on schedule, then we're likely to stay on budget. Third thing, we've got to get the team right. We're striving to bring together the right mix of talent with either onboard manning or leveraging the incredible talents in the private sector. So in closing, the path to successful delivery is clear. Plan projects thoroughly, fund them efficiently, and build them rapidly with the right team of master builders.
Graham is the general of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
When you raise dryland cotton, one of the only things you control is input costs. Reduce your seed costs by as much as 75% without sacrificing yield potential with BSD 9X cotton from Brownfield Seed and Delining. Perfectly adapted for dryland acres, BSD 9X is large seed and has excellent early season vigor and consistently yields at the top in university trials. Find out about BSD 9X by calling 806-637-6282 or visit brownfieldseed.com.